Good morning, Dr. Buechner. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Can you tell us about the genesis of the Scale-Up project, how it got started?
Well, I teach introductory physics to large classes, and I also do research on the teaching and learning of physics, and I know from that there have been a lot of teaching techniques that have been developed to work with students that have been proven to help them learn. The problem is that none of them were really set up for large classes of 100 or more. And so the Scale-Up project was an attempt to apply what a lot of people have learned about the teaching and learning of physics to the large classroom setting.
And then you got involved in the design of this new classroom?
Right. Basically, there are a couple of things to do to help students learn. One is to have them work in teams, and the other is to have them actively learning, doing something other than just sitting and listening. And so to do that with a large classroom, I needed to redesign the space so that students would be focused on each other and also have sort of a work area in front of them. And the best way to do that I was able to find, at least, is to seat them at round tables. So the classroom looks a lot like a restaurant in that there are teams of students. There are three teams of three students sitting at each table looking at each other. The tables are about 2 meters across. And most of the class time is spent doing activities that these teams work on, and then the instructor sort of roams around and listens in and asks questions and provides assistance when needed.
So the teacher is more like a facilitator than a lecturer, right?
That's correct. There is a little bit of class time for lecturing, but it's mostly for motivation and for providing a sort of a big picture overview of the content. Most of the class time is spent with the instructor roaming around, listening in on students and providing guidance that way while they work on these activities.
And the students work on projects? Is it like project-based learning?
It is, although the projects generally are quite short. We tried different lengths of activities, and what we found is that anything over 15 minutes or so, because we have such a wide assortment of students in the classroom, some student groups will get done very, very rapidly. Let's say you give them a 45-minute activity, some groups will be done in 20 minutes, and other groups will get behind, and they may be a half hour behind everyone else. So instead of having a single 45-minute activity, what we would do is break that up into three or more activities. So, for example, you would assign them something that would take 15 minutes to do, and the students who get done early haven't been done for very long. They can't get into too much trouble, so to speak, and they can easily help other students that are nearby that have problems. And the students that are behind don't get very far behind. Then after that 15-minute time, as I roam around as an instructor, I can see what groups have experienced important difficulties that everyone needs to address, which ones have come up with very good solutions to problems. And so I can call on the different groups and have them present to the whole class. And so we sort of reach a consensus that way. And then we go ahead and start on the next 15-minute activity and do the same thing and then wrap it up with the last one. And so the types of activities, we have what are called tangibles, which are observations or measurements, sometimes using very simple equipment, sometimes using more complicated equipment. Tangibles, we also have things called ponderables, which are essentially interesting problems to work on. And then in physics, at least, we also do what I call visibles, which are simulations that we try to tie in where the students model something that they've seen in the real world or something that they know about in the real world with a 3D computer simulation.
I saw the Thiel classroom at the MIT in 2008 at the Next Gen Edu conference.
Right.
What is the difference between Thiel and Scale Up?
Well, Thiel is MIT's adaptation of Scale Up.
In what year was Scale-Up classroom first designed?
We've been doing Scale-Up for just a little over a decade. And we've tried different size classrooms. Our original classroom was 54 students, six tables with 9 students. And then since then, we've gone up here at NC State at least to 11 tables of 9. Other schools have different sizes. Most of the implementations have actually been for smaller classes of 54 or less. And in fact, we've got data that shows that it works even better for small classes than it does for larger ones, which isn't a surprise. But even the larger classes, it's a substantial improvement over a traditional lecture kind of a setting.
Tell me about that data, the scientific research behind the effectiveness of this teaching method.
Well, we've looked at everything that we can think of. Because here at NC State, the course we designed was for engineering students, what we decided to do was, and they were interested in problem solving, is we would start by just taking the standard physics tests, which are a series of problems that were developed by the lecture faculty, and just take those tests and give them to the scale-up students. And we did that, and the scale-up students would regularly perform about a letter grade better on those tests. And so we've shown that sort of comparison. We've also done testing using nationally normed assessment tests, the force concept inventory, the test of understanding graphs and kinematics, a couple of electricity and magnetism tests, things like that. And again, the normalized gain, which is a way of measuring how much students learn during the course of instruction, shows substantial gains, maybe a factor of two or three better than in a traditional setting. We've looked at things like course grades, which is pretty rough, but nonetheless, we looked at course grades and found over a five-year time span with more than 16,000 students, the overall failure rate dropped by about a factor of two for minorities by a factor of four and for women by a factor of five. And this is even though we were demanding more of the students in the scale-up setting.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So what's the active ingredient? I read on the web there, on Wikipedia, I think, they were talking about social interactions between students and their teachers or between students themselves. Is this the active ingredient that makes this approach effective?
Yes, we think it is. There's been a lot of research done by others as well as us here at NC State. Alexander Astin did a study with tens of thousands of students and faculty members and found that it was a correlational study looking at characteristics of students and correlating that to success in college. And what he found was that by far the quality of the relationships between students and between students and faculty was the best predictor of success in college. Certainly we've seen that with females. It's pretty well documented that female students, when they have a problem academically, tend to blame themselves. They'll say things like, I've never been any good at science, I can't do math, I'm not smart enough for this. Male students tend to blame anyone but themselves, but the females at least tend to blame themselves. And so if a woman student's sitting in a lecture hall, even when she's surrounded by 100 or more other students, rather than, if she doesn't understand something, rather than ask a question and reveal that she doesn't know what's going on, she'll just sit there quietly too often. In a scale-up setting, a female student is always sitting near another woman and certainly sitting near a friend that she's been working closely with, and so she's much more likely to ask questions. And if a student at her table or in her group knows the answer, well, they're actually the best person to explain it to because mm-hmm. they think the same way and they just figured it out. They know what's hard. On the other hand, if no one at a table of nine knows the answer, then she knows it's not just her problem. So then she's much more likely to ask the instructor. And we've done, we've done sampling of numbers of questions and quality of questions asked and things like that. And there's just no comparison between the kinds of questions and the number of questions you get in a lecture hall compared to in the scale-up setting. So that social interaction really is key to the whole operation.
I'm on your website right now, North Carolina State University Department of Physics. How can we use that website? It talks about the scale-up project. Do you act as a consultant for other colleges or universities who would like to implement that setup?
There's a couple places on the NC State website where you can get scale-up information. The main scale-up website is at scaleup.ncsu.edu. There's material there that's been posted by a lot of the adopters. If people send me an email, I can give them registered member access to that site, and then they can download papers, research papers, implementation guides, instructional materials that people have developed across the country, actually around the world. And so that website, it's set up as a wiki also, so that as people implement their own version of ScaleUp, they can go ahead and upload pictures and a description, and if they want to share instructional materials, they can go ahead and do that.
All for free?
Oh, yes.
Wow, that's fantastic. And can this model be applied to all disciplines or only science teaching?
Well, it's been applied to science, math, engineering, business, nursing, medicine, literature, political science. So it can be applied to a lot of different areas.
Dr. Bickner, thank you so much for the interview.
Oh, I'm glad to help. If people have questions, just have them email me. They can get the information right from the ScaleUp website.
Thank you.